All eyes are on Congress right now as the trial of the president winds to a conclusion, but there's plenty of work for state legislatures to do as well. Oregon's legislature gets down to business for its short 2020 session on Monday. Pew Charitable Trusts monitors the issues facing state legislatures across the country. Pew's State Line Project put out an annual State of the States report tracking issues facing the states. We are joined by Sophie Quinton, a reporter at Pew Charitable Trusts on the State Line Project, who has the issues in front of her and is familiar with how California approaches them. Sophie, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Jeff. Thanks. It's great to be on.
Would you give us a general outline, please, of what the State of the States project is all about?
Sure. So every year at Stateline, we do a series that looks ahead to some issues that lawmakers are likely to be thinking about and working on in the coming legislative session or the coming year. And this year, we were looking for issues that were maybe a little bit interesting. There are always some issues that are kind of an ongoing focus for states, like funding education, healthcare, that kind of thing. But we try to look for issues that are maybe a little bit new this year or something that is kind of a rising trend that folks might want to be paying attention to in the coming year.
Okay, so some more specifics about some of these issues. For example, you mentioned healthcare tends to be one, but this year you're looking at rural healthcare as an example of that.
Yes, exactly. So we looked at rural healthcare and kind of what is happening in terms of both the challenge facing rural areas. A lot of hospitals are closing. There's a shortage of primary care doctors, and also what states are trying to do to address that. We looked at housing. There's an affordability crisis in many states, particularly in California. And again, what lawmakers might do to address that issue in the coming year. We also looked at disaster preparation and response, which again is a big issue in California. We looked at voter laws, so laws around voter registration, voter ID, which is obviously a big topic heading into the 2020 election. And the last issue that we looked into was vaping. Obviously, there was an outbreak of lung illnesses linked to vaping last year, and that's continuing to be a hot topic on the healthcare side that lawmakers are focused on.
So you looked at each one of the 50 states essentially through the lens of these five issues?
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's start at the top because you rolled them out one day at a time this week, and Monday it was voting access. As you point out in the report, the bluer the state, the more liberal the ease of voting. Is this much of an issue at all in California?
You know, I'm not sure what the focus is in California. That article was written by one of my colleagues, and I don't think he sort of highlighted California very much in the piece. But you're right, in general, we're seeing in left-leaning states like California a push toward things like allowing people with a criminal record, a felony conviction, to vote despite that, allowing for longer early voting, voting by mail, that kind of thing. We're sort of seeing a general push in that direction on the left, whereas on the right, we're seeing more efforts to sort of be stricter on what kind of identification you can provide to vote, to limit early voting. And we're sort of seeing a red state, blue state divide there. That's pretty interesting.
Okay, so the blue states are lowering barriers in a lot of cases and the red states raising them.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Let's move on to from voting rights to the number two issue on the list, the vaping you mentioned. What is the general issue there for all states?
Well, I think lawmakers are very concerned, first of all, with this outbreak of lung illnesses that I mentioned that I think the CDC has determined was largely tied to THC, so sort of marijuana vaping products. But states are very worried about, you know, both that medical issue and then the high rates of teen and even preteen use of these flavored vapes. So we're seeing a lot of efforts in the states to sort of go above and beyond what the federal government has done to crack down on these flavored, you know, vaping cartridges that young people are using, to try to ban, you know, all flavored vapes or to raise taxes on them so that people are less likely to purchase them.
With vaping in particular, there's been this bit of a, I won't call it a tug of war, but it seems like there's a certain amount of questioning about who should take first action. Should it be the states? Should it be the federal government? Because you got even the White House talking about the vaping issues. Do you detect any hesitancy in state capitals in terms of addressing vaping because they think maybe the feds will take it on first?
You know, that's a great question. I'm not sure how that dynamic's playing out state by state, but I know that for some lawmakers, there's a desire to take action on the issue, you know, to not wait for the federal government. So I think that, you know, that the response to what's happening at the federal level can kind of go both ways.
We're talking to Sophie Quinton here on the Jefferson Exchange. She's a reporter with the State Line Project of the Pew Charitable Trusts, which put out the State of the States report just this week, looking at the five issues facing state legislatures: voting access, vaping, natural disaster preparation, affordable housing, and rural health care. You can join the conversation on the Exchange. Questions, comments, welcome at 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. As we look at our part of the world, I mean, the whole issue of natural disaster prep can be huge for both California and Oregon. California is certainly prone to several types of natural disasters, Oregon not far behind. What do you see happening on this front?
Yeah, I think, as you mentioned, as we've seen more of these disasters break out, lawmakers are increasingly thinking about what can we do to be better prepared and to respond to these disasters when they hit. There have been quite a few interesting proposals on the West Coast. In California, there's a push to borrow some money through a bonding measure that would then go towards sort of disaster preparedness and mitigation. And up in Washington State, the Commissioner for Public Lands is pushing for setting aside a specific pot of money that then would go towards addressing wildfires. I think what we see in many states is during a bad wildfire year, the lawmakers will have to sort of appropriate emergency money, and that is much more complicated, folks in the fire world argue, than simply having a savings account, essentially, that can then be tapped into to pay for fighting fires during those big years.
Well, Oregon certainly created its own wildfire task force, including a legislator from the area where our studio is located. So definitely some action on the wildfire level of things. I do notice, Sophie, that in the reporting on this issue, natural disaster preparedness in the states, that even states that don't officially recognize climate change are seeking federal dollars to help with the impacts of climate change.
Right. Yeah, our reporting did show that, and I think that's because, you know, regardless of where you stand on sort of what's causing these disasters, they're happening and there is a need to address them. So we do see some states that, you know, might not be eager to accept that climate change is the cause of some of these disasters. They still have to deal with them, and they often need funding to do that.
Yeah, in Texas and South Carolina, the two cited in the
right.
Pew reporting that don't officially recognize climate change, but also have coastlines that are getting affected by rising sea levels, so are asking for some federal help with that. In the issue of disaster preparedness, is there anything out there that seems completely new and out of the box in either ways of funding disaster preparedness or ways of thinking about it?
Oh, that's another great question. Again, I'm not really on the cutting edge of this myself because one of my colleagues wrote that piece, but I think, you know, we're seeing both a bigger focus on just finding the money in interesting ways. States obviously, you know, need to fund some of these efforts. But also, you know, lawmakers are always looking for innovative ways to address those issues, for sure.
Which is the area that you reported on directly?
The housing.
Okay.
Housing issue.
And that's where we are right now. Okay, this is another huge issue.
Okay, great.
certainly a big one in California, one that receives constant attention. I have to believe that, for example, the State of the States report was locked up before the recent flurry of activity by California's governor.
Yes, that's correct. But it turned out to be timely because the story, it ran after the announcement by Governor Newsom, and it also ran sort of while lawmakers were voting on this very controversial zoning proposal that's been kind of in the legislature for a few years now. And the proposal, which I wrote about and that was recently sort of making headlines, was to change local zoning rules in transit-rich areas and in employment centers to allow for duplexes, apartment buildings, more dense housing in single-family areas. Now, that bill didn't advance this week, but there are probably going to be some sort of related issues or related bills that will be put forward in California. And we're also seeing a similar push in other states. So I think this issue of looking at local zoning and thinking about, you know, ways to push local governments to address affordable housing is definitely something we're going to see continue.
That issue in particular seems to have a lot of traction, the idea of getting rid of what's called exclusionary zoning, the idea that you can start putting multiple family homes into what had been previously zoned for single family. Oregon made a change on that front last year alone. Is there any particular
right.
backlash or pushback you're seeing from local communities who are saying, hey, we want to be able to set our own guidelines?
Right. Yeah, there's definitely some pushback from local communities, both from local leaders, mayors, et cetera, some of whom say, you know, we have our own process here. We want to have local input. We want to, you know, maintain control of what our communities look like. And also from some residents who don't want to see their communities change. And what was interesting in the debate in California is that there's also sort of ambivalence around this approach from some folks in the affordable housing world. Some activists are saying, you know, wait a minute, rolling back zoning regulations might only lead to more luxury developments, and that's really the last thing we need to house people who are low income or on the brink of homelessness. So there's definitely, it's definitely a controversial proposal, even though I think, you know, more and more lawmakers nationally are thinking about it.
In California in particular, where you have a couple of fantastically highly priced real estate markets, San Francisco chief among them, I mean, is there a belief that you're kind of reaching the limits of what is even possible with affordable housing, given how expensive real estate is in the city?
Yeah, I think so, particularly in those high-cost areas. I mean, there was one activist who I spoke to in my reporting who basically said, you know, states and cities are trying to address this issue, but what we really need is for the federal government to step in, even a return to sort of building federally funded public housing, because he just doesn't see how sort of, you know, there can be a market-based solution, which I thought was pretty interesting. And certainly when you see the type of new housing that's being built in some of these high-cost areas and how challenging it is to build subsidized units or even, you know, starter homes, you know, the economics just don't seem to work out in some places. So, yeah, I think there is kind of a sense that there is a limit to what localities and states can do.
This is the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about the Pew Charitable Trust's State Line Project, where Sophie Quinton is a reporter, and the State of the States report that rolled out over the 5 days of this working week. You can join the conversation on the Exchange at 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. I want to touch on rural health care before we go here. This is the one just out today, and it sounds like living in a rural area can actually shorten your lifespan.
Yeah, there are absolutely a lot of challenges facing folks who live in rural areas and who are trying to access healthcare. As my colleague Mike laid out in his story today, folks in rural areas tend to have worse health outcomes. They're more likely to die of some of the leading diseases that push up mortality rates, like cancer and heart disease. And they also have a harder time accessing care. We're seeing rural hospitals close their doors, and a lot of folks are finding it hard to access even a primary care doctor or find a clinic to go to. So there's definitely a sense that, you know, something has to be done to help these communities.
What would that be? I mean, it's hard to imagine a state plunking down enough money to say, okay, keep your hospital open.
Right, right. I think that, you know, states are trying various approaches. One interesting point that my colleague made was that in some states, the challenge facing rural areas has become an argument for expanding Medicaid, because if sort of insurance is expanded, even Medicaid, which doesn't reimburse hospitals as well as private insurance, that can help keep a hospital afloat, because there's some payer stepping in to pay for those lower income patients. And there are also sort of more innovative approaches that are being tested out, like advancing telemedicine, which is when you can sort of Skype in with a doctor without actually having to see someone face-to-face. That can be an efficient way to get specialists into a rural community without actually having to make sure that they're living and working there.
All right.
There are all kinds of approaches out there.
All right. Healthcare, housing, natural disaster preparedness, vaping, and voting access, the five issues that were considered in the State of the States report put out by the Pew Charitable Trust's State Line Project, where Sophie Quinton is a reporter. Sophie, thank you for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me on.